rather than being able to wait until the end of the year before you settle up your personal taxes and pay your two lots of payments on account,
yeah,
it's essentially saying, look, we want to try and real time this, because for the government, that's great because they get money quicker.
Welcome to the Tax Compass podcast, navigating UK tax for expats with LSR partners. Welcome to the Tax Compass podcast with LSR partners, with me, Simon Rouet, and my business partner, Laura Sant.
Hi.
I'm back home. I couldn't resist saying something about being back home, because for those of you who watched our budget one, I was in France, terrified of what the government might do. I'm still terrified of what the government is doing, but that's not the subject today. Well, it sort of is, because today we're going to talk about making tax digital. We're recording this just before Christmas. There's a terribly annoying advert on the radio all the time about this very topic. Some chap going into a shop to buy jeans. You may have heard it. But the government is ramping up its campaign to make people aware of it. So we thought we should probably touch on it, and that's what we're going to do. I fortunately don't have to have anything to do with this, because at the moment it's not for partnerships, and we're a partnership, so that's good. But Laura, bless her, has had to spend some time actually figuring out what's going on. So Laura, do you want to talk us through who it applies to start with?
Okay, thank you. So I suppose, just to clarify, it's Making Tax Digital for Income Tax and Self-Assessment, or MTD ITSA, because there is MTD already in place for that, and that's been in place for quite a few years now. That is coming into play, or MTD ITSA is coming into play as of...
That's a catchy name for
you. Yeah, yeah. As of the 6th of April 2026, and that is for people who have got self-employment income, as you mentioned, not partnership income, it's sole traders, and or rental income. And when I'm saying income, I'm meaning turnover rather than profits, over £50,000 per year. That's kind of the first wave, as it were.
And when you say first wave, are they going to reduce that?
Yes. So from the 6th of April 2027, that will get reduced to £30,000 per year. And then from the 6th of April 2028, is for those that have got turnovers of £20,000 or more per year.
I assume it will go to zero eventually, and they'll just make everyone do it.
Well, I don't quite know.
It's weird though, isn't it? Because that number, like 20 grand, is like lower than the minimum wage. Now, obviously, people have this, often will have this income on top of other income, like a salary and you rent out a property or whatever.
But yes.
I guess for sole traders, like if you're, I don't know, an electrician or something,
yeah,
then it's basically going to be, yeah, you're going to be in it, right?
Yeah, pretty much. In terms of how they're going to put you into it and how they're going to figure out whether you need to be in or not, at the moment, people are filing their 24/25 tax returns. HMRC are looking at it, and in theory, they are writing to people. Certainly, we've had some clients who are meeting the criteria will need to go into MTD ITSA next year, and they have received letters from HMRC. But I did have a little check before we got on this call. HMRC have said that. because you don't get a letter from HMRC, it's not an excuse not to enter it if you need to. But apparently it's on the basis of, so if you meet the criteria for 24/25, you will need to enter from the 6th of April 2026. The reason being is
for the 26/27.
The 26/27 tax year, yes, because in the 25/26 tax year, I suppose, you know, you might not necessarily, if you're not keeping on top of things, you might not necessarily be aware of whether you're exceeding the £50,000 mark.
And it will be one of those standard ones where I guess they will try and assess it. But the reason they say not getting a letter from us is no excuse is if you've claimed the remittance basis in 24/25 and you haven't put loads of rental income you have from some Timbuktu or wherever,
yeah,
then you could still be in it. And they'll never, I mean, it's classic HMRC, isn't it? They're never going to say, no, it's not an excuse.
Yeah.
So yeah, you have to be aware of what you've got going on, right?
I think as well, it's the whole HMRC puts the letter in the post, you've changed addresses and haven't told them that you've changed addresses, so you don't physically receive them.
Oh, yeah, stamps.
Yeah, yeah. It's your obligation to get
things. Quite why they can't send an email, one wonders, but there we go.
Yeah, yes. As I say, it's turnover, but it's not £50,000 self-employment turnover or £50,000 rental profit turnover. If you've got, say, for example, you've got £30,000 worth of trading turnover and £30,000 worth of rental turnover, overall, you've got £60,000 worth of turnover, you need to enter the system. And the joys of it are that if you, for example, if you have multiple sources of income that need to be entered within MTD ITSA, you have to keep different records.
God, what a nightmare. And just contrast that if you're self-employed but you run your business through a company.
Yeah.
Is that a way where, presumably because it's a company and it has its own tax personality and you do corporation tax,
yeah,
that sort of takes you outside of it?
Yes.
And even if you're taking dividends of more than 50 grand, I assume that doesn't pay you in it.
Yeah.
So it really is penalising. And it's just sole traders and property income.
It is sole traders.
Why don't they just do what the Greens are saying and ban renting out properties? That seems to be what they're trying to move to, right?
I certainly think that it feels like that. When you look, if you go and have a look at the HMRC site about making tax digital, and they've got a section which is, well, why is it useful and why is it beneficial to do this?
Well, it's cash flow, I assume. Because they get the tax earlier.
Well, yeah, but they don't sell it as a, why is it useful for them? Because obviously from their perspective, it's bringing in money. It's trying to prevent people, because it's all done digitally now. You know, on the face of it, you've got a bank account that's linked to it. You're reconciling things.
So you have to have a separate bank account? Do you have to?
Well, on the face of it, you don't necessarily have to have a separate bank account. But if you don't have a separate bank account, all of a sudden you or your accountant has got to go through and go, oh, personal, personal, personal. And fundamentally, whilst I don't think necessarily HMRC would have access to that immediately, they'll see everything of what's going on in terms of what you're spending, etc. So, I mean, most people would probably at that stage prefer to have a separate bank account. Certainly when Making Tax Digital for VAT came into play, that was suggested for a lot of people. There will be some sole traders who are already within the scope of Making Tax Digital for VAT who will already be keeping their records electronically. For them, it probably won't feel too traumatic, other than possibly if they're not keeping their books up to date on it, they're likely to have their bank being reconciled. If they're not kind of uploading their receipts on a timely basis, for them, they mainly just need to
get a bit better at it.
Yes. Yeah. But for people who've fallen below the VAT threshold historically and have never been registered for VAT, for people like them, that's going to be a really big change. And for landlords, especially, a pretty significant change. But again, when you kind of look at what HMRC is saying, the advantages are, oh, better cash flow, get a better understanding of your business. I agree for self-employed people who are running, I say, proper businesses and genuinely kind of maybe have that more complex things going on. The one thing that they'd said is, you know, you kind of, because you're going to have to scan in your receipts, you're not going to lose them. You're not going to lose the ability
to claim for them.
Yes.
As a deduction.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are things like that, but again, I feel like for landlords, that's...
Well, it's just part of the ongoing war against landlords, isn't it? I mean, we all know that landlords are evil people. So on that basis, it's absolutely right that the government should be penalising them in every single way possible. So that's coming in from 2026, from April 2026. It doesn't apply to people who are effectively self-employed, but through a company.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Or partnerships.
Or partnerships, thank God. Although I suppose it doesn't really bother me because I don't get involved in any of that stuff. I leave that in your court and our accountants, of course.
Yeah.
What else do people need to be aware of around this? What are some of the stumbling blocks that we're worried that people might get caught out by?
So there's, before we go on to stumbling blocks, there are a few people who potentially, I say a few people, there's a particular bracket, shall I say, of our client base who are not going to fall within the scope of Making Tax Digital. And those are people who don't have a national insurance number, because I guess the systems obviously don't recognize it. Yeah. Yes.
And so just so people are aware of why you might not have a national insurance number, if you're like renting out property in the UK, it's got nothing to do with having a national insurance number. So I guess that's where it is. And could you be in a situation of being self-employed and not having a national insurance number? I guess if you've always been self-employed, or do you have to have a national insurance number so you can pay your
national costs or whatever? Yeah, exactly. So you shouldn't be self-employed in the UK if you haven't got a national insurance number, because
you need to pay your national insurance
record. However, rental profits are not subject to national insurance.
Yes.
Well, no, but they're up in the tax rate, aren't they, to reflect the fact that there's no national insurance.
Oh, but then they'll put national insurance on them. I mean, that's obviously the next step.
Well, how are they going to do that for people who've never lived in the country?
They'll just say you've got to pay national insurance.
Pay national insurance. I mean, you don't have a record.
I mean, ultimately, it's stupid anyway, isn't it? Because it's like national insurance isn't national insurance. It's just more tax with a different name.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's hypothecated.
Yeah. So, that I suppose at the moment that's a kind of particular population that.
So generally, that's going to be non-resident landlords is where for our client base it's going to be focused.
Yes, and then I suppose there's also those who are digitally excluded for potentially religious reasons or because, yeah.
So you're saying that religious people in certain circumstances don't have to go in for this? I mean, how does that work?
Well, on the face of it, if you've got a religious reason why you wouldn't use a computer. We were saying...
Oh, like the Amish or something like that.
Then,
are there many Amish people in the UK? I don't know. Is that a thing?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. But potentially...
And see, that feels like a question for ChatGPT.
Yeah. And those who might be digitally excluded just by nature of their age, for example.
A good point, isn't it? I mean, like getting little old ladies to do it.
Yeah.
You can, but then the problem with that, right, is that... Like the religious thing is a really difficult one because then... If you're saying one group don't have to do it for religious reasons, I mean, you can just come up. I mean, as we all know, like from the last census, I think in the UK, in order for it to be classified by the census as an official religion, you have to have more than 10,000 people identify in that religion, which is why Jediism...
You're not starting a religion.
But that's the great thing about the British, right? Is like it's a census. It goes around online that if enough people say they're a Jedi, it gets registered as a real religion. It is now a religion that's registered in the UK because there was a thing that was done the last time the census was out. So maybe that's a thing we can do. We can have a sort of anti-digital religion and get people signed up to that to avoid making tax digital.
I was going
to
say...
It'd be just fun to see how HMRC would deal with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe I'll try it.
I was going to say, the age thing is one that I think it's that HMRC would accept. I'm just thinking, you know, when they said in terms of the budget, they said they were going to change it so that you, was it 12,000, they're reducing the cash ISA limit down to, except for over 65s, where they would accept, they could put in up to 20,000 because they just appreciate that actually people over the age of 65 are not going to want to change their habits and they'll feel more comfortable.
And this is slightly off topic to making tax digital, but it's quite interesting that type of thing, I think, is going to become more a thing in tax. I was listening to an interesting podcast and the guy was saying about, you know, how like young people feel disenfranchised. Why not give people a deduction? Like you only have to pay half the rates of income tax until you're 30 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think governments are going to start using that type of stuff at both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
As a way of, and I actually have a lot of sympathy for that.
I was going to say, somebody who's in the middle of that spectrum, I don't.
Yeah, but this guy was saying, oh, no tax until you're 30. And then when you get above 70 or 75 or whatever.
Yeah.
Because the point he was making is that we've got a demographic problem, so you need to try and incentivize young people. And there's another interesting one on this, which you will like, which is in Hungary, they have a policy where if you have a baby, when you start work, you get a 25% reduction in the amount of income tax you have to pay.
Yeah.
If you have two, you get a 50% reduction. So if you have four children, as a woman, you don't pay any income tax, which is how Hungary is trying to...
For how long?
Forever. Yeah. But the point is, Hungary has identified that they've got a demographic problem. And that's quite a clever way of incentivizing people, right? And particularly women, it would address pay gap issues. It's a hugely progressive move.
Yeah.
And it would really incentivize women who've had children to go back into the workforce.
True.
It's quite interesting. Well, that's nothing to do with making tax digital, but...
No, we are driving
back. Well, but also, making taxes is quite boring. But you know, we can't just spend our podcast with me ranting about stuff, but I thought I'd just introduce that because I thought it was quite interesting.
Yeah.
So coming back to making tax digital.
Yes.
What else do people need to be aware of? I know that's a very open question, but
sorry.
Go on.
So effectively, if you're in the Make a Tax Digital, it's a system. You're going to have to file quarterly tax returns.
And you have to use proper software.
Which I assume you have to pay for. It won't be free.
I think there are some free options.
Oh, okay.
And there are certain softwares that if you, for example, were maybe linked with a particular bank, they would offer the free software.
Okay, as well.
So there are there are various options. I mean, if you just, again, go onto the HMRC site, they've got quite a bit on there in terms of what's going on, and they've got the link in terms of...
And that was gov.uk, right?
Yeah, but it needs to be HMRC approved software. There are various softwares that have already had sign off. There are various softwares that haven't yet had sign off. My understanding is that you're then going to need to be able to take the information from where you're submitting your MTD compliant filings. You're then going to need to do your tax return at the end of the year through that software. Quite a lot of them do have options for filing your tax returns, but I'm conscious that, for example, with our client base, there are additional complexities associated with the foreign income and gain regime if they want to do that with residents.
That could be a nightmare, yeah, couldn't it?
Exactly.
And so just linking it back to like the quarterly thing that you have to do.
Yeah.
Obviously, like as we find with our partnership accounts, we finish our year and we sort of have a fair idea of what our numbers are. But then there's obviously the whole fiddling around and capital allowances and goodness knows what else that need to go into it. I assume that on a quarterly basis, you're just doing like, this is my run rate, these are my expenses up until now, and sort of stick that in. And then do you do a reconciliation at the end?
Yeah, so it's supposed to be unadjusted. You're not supposed to stick through any accruals or...
effectively
a cash basis. And then the adjustments will get put through at the end of the year as part of the year-end reconciliation.
And if you do property and you're allowed to do property in your personal tax return just on a cash basis, presumably you're still allowed to do that? Or they're not trying to make you come up with like a proper like set of accounts or anything? It's just like going to be onward filing every quarter.
Yes, it's allegedly, according to HMRC, it's not going to take very long to do on a quarterly basis. I mean, I think the reality is that's not necessarily going to be the case, especially for people who haven't previously been keeping their records on digital software the first year. There's probably going to be for people who are supporting them, and we still haven't yet made a decision how we're going to deal with making tax digital in terms of whether we will support, whether we'll ask.
Should we make a decision live on the podcast?
Maybe. But I think there's going to be a lot of extra work initially. I think maybe once people have gotten into it, it should be quite a quick process.
I suppose there's a point, isn't there, where if you're actually... I was talking to my electrician about it, because he's nearly as grumpy as I am about stuff. And his point was, well, my accountant does it all for me because he's already got enough turnover that he does that.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, I'll just send them all the stuff.
Yeah.
And when you have a business that's big enough that you're charging VAT, then you're also going to be paying an accountant. Yes. You just are going to be paying an accounting firm to do it for you. So then I guess it doesn't really make any difference.
Yeah.
And with software like, you know, the receipt scanning software and all the rest of it, it's the same stuff, right? And you're just now, rather than being able to wait until the end of the year before you settle up your personal taxes and pay your two lots of payments on account, it's essentially saying, look, we want to try and real-time this because for the government that's great because they get money quicker.
But actually, for people like them, I should say that they're already paying, like if you're in payments on account system, you're already paying it twice a year. So
yes, it's not
you're splitting it.
The issue, I guess, is for people who just have, and it's so weird, isn't it? Because there was that whole thing when they announced the change to the tax filing thing for, you know, it was always 1,000 and they put it up to 3,000.
Yeah.
The way they announced it was that it sounded like you could do 3,000 without having to pay tax, but actually it was just a filing thing.
Yeah.
It's sort of weird because they sort of made a big hoo-ha about like, oh, we're going to make people's side hustle easier because we want to encourage, you know, entrepreneurism and all the rest of it, which is nonsense, but that's what they sort of said.
Yeah.
And then with this, it's like, yeah, but if you've got a side hustle that's doing quite well, we're going to make it a lot more tedious for you.
Yes.
Because like, I mean, I've rented out property and it's funny because you just leave it until the end of the year. You get a statement from the letting agent who runs it all and you pay them a decent wedge to do it. And then if you've got to start saying, oh God, I've got to get a quarterly statement and I've got to go and get software. And then you think, well,
fees to get somebody to.
Yeah. And then you think, well, I can't be bothered doing it. So I've got to hire an accountant. Accountants are going to charge a decent whack. And suddenly you're looking at it going, what's the point? And
yeah.
It's like, you can imagine that there will be a number of people who just go, you know, I get turnover of like if you rent any property out in the southeast of the UK,
yeah.
you're going to get caught by this because no one pays less than what, £2,000 in rent.
Yeah.
I say no one, but like that's not a lot of rent if you're living yeah. in London, right? And so you're going to be in it. And then it's like, oh, what's the point? And it's
I think that's it. I think potentially with the drive and the drive downwards in terms of the turnover amount, I suppose potentially you might have with a property in London, might be £2,000 a month that you take, but actually if it's a jointly owned property, you might find that between the two,
you're not getting a lot of money out of it, right?
Yeah, and I was going to say, so I think it is probably with a view to trying to discourage people. There'll be a lot of landlords who are just like,
Well, we're seeing that. I mean, how many capital gains tax returns have we done over the last 12 months where people are just, I mean, it's like me, we sold our rental property because it's just like, it's too much hassle. Yeah. We don't actually make a lot of money from it. There are lots of risks with this new tenancy bill that's coming in yep. about what you can and can't do. I just can't be asked. And the problem with it is that, especially again in the southeast, it's actually creating a real problem in the rental market because people can afford rent, but do they have a deposit to be able to pay the house prices in London?
Yeah.
It's really, really problematic. Okay, so that's something that's coming in from April.
April, yes.
So it's coming in April. It's going to get reduced down to £20,000 over the next 3 years in yep. terms of the level. Do you go in and out of it? Like, you know, businesses don't always make the same amount of money. If you're a property business, you make 55 the 1 year of assessment and you have to go into it for the year after because yep. of the way they do it.
Yep.
Tenant moves out or stops paying their rent. Yep. Do you drop out of it or do you just, I mean, I assume practically speaking, they'll just assume that you just carry on, do they?
So if, for example, you cease to be self-employed, you can notify HMRC that you cease to be self-employed and you can come out of the system. I would imagine there's something fairly similar in terms of the rental.
But if you cease to do it, not if 1 year you happen to drop.
Yes.
You're not going to suddenly get a year when you don't have to do it. You can't, yeah. I can't imagine they'll do
that. I can't imagine they will do that. And as well, because again, if you've got rental losses, you can generally only carry them forward if you, and to be offset against the same rental profit, rental business. So if you're notifying HMRC to say, I've ceased my rental business.
And then come back.
Because you've got 12 months where actually you're going to be spending yeah. some money in investing in the property, and then you start renting it out again. There's probably a fairly difficult risk or fairly risky that actually they might turn around and say, well, no, you told me you ceased your rental business. Must be a new one. You can't have it. So,
goodness.
So yes, the only other thing that's possibly worth mentioning, given our client base, is if you are non-resident, from HMRC's perspective, they're only going to be looking at UK taxable elements. So they will be looking at UK-based properties. And if you are doing self-employment in the UK, it would be the UK element that's taxable that you'd be needing to report. You don't need to report your worldwide self-employment, for example, or rental profits from elsewhere. But my understanding is if you're a UK resident, you are going to need to report rental profits from all over the world. The one thing that I'm yet to find clarification on is if you are planning on doing the foreign income and gain regime, how that will impact upon whether you need to enter
it's a nightmare, isn't it? Because they'll say you need to report it and then pay tax on it and then back it out.
But having said that, if you think about somebody who's current, maybe somebody arrived 2 years ago, they're in their, I guess, first year of self assessment. They've been taxed on the remittance basis. From HMRC's perspective, they look at their tax return. They don't meet the criteria because their rental profits outside of the UK, they haven't
reported it. They wouldn't know.
So on the face of it, based upon the 24-25 tax return, they wouldn't necessarily need to enter the system. It's slightly less clear in terms of because we still haven't yet seen how the foreign income and gains regime would actually apply in terms of the logistics of it.
How are you
because the whole thing with the foreign income and gain regime is you have to quantify what income you've got
to keep it
outside the scope. So you're going to have to tell HMRC about this foreign income and gains, and it seems a bit silly from HMRC's perspective to go, well, if you're going to be claiming the foreign income and gain regime, we want you to report it, pay tax on it, and then claim it.
And just on this thing, one of the things we probably haven't been that clear on. So I do my quarterly thing and I do it on a cash basis. How do I know what tax to pay? Is the way it's going to work in terms of the software that they'll give you like 25% of your personal allowance if you're entitled to one
and it sort of will generate a tax bill via like a tax code does? Is that what they're sort of moving towards?
I would imagine that will be the case. I don't actually.
Yeah, there's been nothing.
No.
All the communications, it always seems to be about, you've got to register for this and do that and get software. But when it actually comes to what you might have to cough up, that seems very unclear at the moment.
I also don't know whether they would look at it and go, well, what are the... So one of the things that I know you don't need to do is you're not going to need to report your dividend income. Like, you know, if you've got other investment income, you don't need to report and pay tax on that on a quarterly basis.
But let's say you're employed and you are on a zero T tax code because you earn loads in your employment.
Yeah.
Are they going to just say, yeah, you have to pay it at 45% or...
You would have thought they might look at doing that. If you think about it, when you do capital gains tax returns and they look at your tax position for that, they will always ask you, well, what is your...
How much do you have in the basic rate band to the next rate?
Yeah, exactly. So I would imagine there's probably going to be that sort of question coming up.
We'll have to wait and see, won't we?
Yeah, yes.
Making tax digital just sounds like more admin to me, that's the way things go, I guess. So anyway, I hope you found this useful and interesting. Any more questions, then do get in touch with us. Please like and subscribe the podcast and enjoy making tax digital. Thanks for listening to the Tax Compass podcast brought to you by LSR Partners, where we help you pay the right tax in the right place at the right time. Book a call with us. Details are in the show notes.